Master Commissioner Robert Mayer presiding.
Good morning. There are two cases to be argued this morning. I will note for the record that these arguments are being conducted by video conferencing, that they're being streamed on the court's website, and that they will be archived under the Master Commissioner archives afterward. The first case to be heard is number 2020-110, NAT Transportation versus McLean, the Tax Commissioner. We'll hear from Mr. Lang.
And good morning. Yes, my name is Jim Lang. I'm the attorney for the appellant, NAT Transportation. I reserve 3 minutes of my time. This appeal deals with the use tax exemption in revised code 5739.02B32, which we'll call the transportation for hire exemption. And to understand that transportation for hire exemption, it helps to understand that there are two types of trucking companies in Ohio. There are for hire motor carriers. Prior to 2012, they were called motor transportation companies. The name was changed in the statute. There are also private motor carriers. For hire motor carriers are public utilities. Private motor carriers are not. Private motor carriers do not haul property belonging to others because they either take ownership of the property from the customer or they haul their own goods. Private motor carriers are not paid by the public to simply haul property from point A to point B. The Amazon trucks you see on the road, GM using their own trucks, which is an example in the record. Those are examples. Rumpke Container Services, the Rumpke case at the Ohio Supreme Court, that company is another example. Private motor carriers are not certified by the PUCO because they are not public utilities. There's still some regulation of them, but they're not public utilities. On the other hand, for hire motor carriers haul property belonging to others from point A to point B. They pick up property from one party, deliver the property to another party, sometimes to the same party at a different location. They don't take ownership of what they haul. So there's many companies like this in Ohio. There's Panther 2, Osborne, Kaplan, you see them on the roads. You see them on the highways. NAT Transportation is one of those companies. For hire motor carriers like NAT do qualify for the transportation for hire exemption. They are engaged in highway transportation for hire. They're certified by regulators as common carriers, and they get paid to transport personal property that they don't own from point A to point B. Now, NAT provided evidence at the BTA hearing that it satisfied each of the four conditions of the transportation for hire exemption to the use tax. The tax commissioner contests only two of those four conditions. It is not disputed that NAT is compensated for its hauling, and it's not disputed that NAT holds a PUCO certification. The two questions at issue on this appeal are under the statute, whether the property transported by NAT is personal property, tangible personal property as referenced in the statute, and also then whether that property being transported is property belonging to others. On the first point, this court should apply the tax code definition of tangible personal property, which would seem somewhat obvious, but there is a definition of tangible property. It's in the tax code. So I'd reference revised code section 5739.01YY, also the definition of personal property in 5701.03A. And in fact, the BTA in the Triad Transport case looked at this issue. The tax commissioner raised a similar issue, said, you know, maybe you should look at definitions that are outside the tax code. The BTA in the Triad Transport case said, you know, we're going to look at 5733, in particular 5701.03A. We're going to determine that waste is tangible personal property because it is the subject of ownership until it is disposed of. In that case, it determined while waste was on the trucks, it maintains its status as tangible personal property. Now, the tax commissioner says that the applicable definition of waste is in a PUCO rule, Ohio Administrative Code 4901-5-12A. That's in a chapter of the PUCO procedural rules governing motor carrier certification. And in fact, that rule is consistent with the difference between for-hire motor carriers and private carriers. The PUCO rule says that the PUCO does not regulate the transportation of garbage or other commodity or substance, and here's the quote, discarded by the owner thereof with the purpose of abandonment, unquote. So for the PUCO to regulate the transport of waste, they are regulating waste if it has not been discarded with the with the purpose of abandonment. But if it has been discarded with the purpose of abandonment, it's not subject to regulation by the PUCO. That ties in very cleanly to the difference between a for-hire carrier and a private motor carrier.
But Mr. Lang, the exemption here would depend upon what these particular three trucks that are at issue are doing. The overall business of NAT would not necessarily be determinative, right? We have to look at, the BTA had to look at what the actual use of these particular trucks was.
That's absolutely right.
The statute requires that there be a primary use in transporting personal property belonging to others. And so, I mean, there's quite a bit of evidence in the record, but what would you point to that establishes the primary use of these essentially trash hauling trucks as transporting property that belongs to others?
And the evidence in the record, it is different for as you said, there's three trucks at issue here. There's two Peterbilt trucks. The Peterbilt trucks are basically a cab with a chassis. The chassis kind of carries one of those kind of large dumpsters that would be left behind a commercial or industrial or at a commercial industrial facility. The commercial industrial customer fills it up with whatever their waste product is. When it's full, they call NAT. NAT dispatches one of these Peterbilt trucks, picks the trailer up, transports it to the designated location, designated by the customer, and unloads it. So that's the hauling that's going on.
But the location is a landfill, right?
It's typically a landfill, yes. For the Peterbilt trucks, the owner of NAT did testify that it's commercial industrial debris. It can be construction debris. Sometimes it's scrap. Sometimes it's recyclables. But there's no dispute in the record that and the basis of the claim for the exemption is that the primary use is what would be referred to as waste or industrial scrap. But the record is also clear that with regard to that property that's being put into those containers, that NAT does not take ownership of that property at any time, and that the waste in those containers that the Peterbilts are carrying, that the property owners, that the generators of that waste are designating the final destination of that waste. So
whether they still own the waste is kind of the main point, isn't it? I mean,
it is the main point, and I would say, the testimony at the hearing was very clear that NAT does not take ownership of the waste. And again, that's because of the difference between kind of what a for-hire motor carrier does and what a private motor carrier like Rumpke does. NAT operates its business in a way that it simply moves goods. It's not exclusively a garbage hauler. It started out, and this is in the record, it started off as a for-hire motor carrier, hauling steel. So it's always operated as a for-hire motor carrier. It doesn't care what's on the back of its trucks. It gets paid to haul property of others to wherever the generator of the waste wants that waste to go. So the and I think if the what was interesting with the Peterbilt trucks is the BTA said, we don't think overall that there's enough evidence that customers have designated where that waste is going to go. That was error on the BTA's part because, as you said, what has to be looked at is what each individual truck is doing. The BTA actually found that the customers of that were being served by the Peterbilt trucks, which are the commercial and industrial customers, the BTA specifically found that those customers do designate the location where where their property is going. On that basis, if designation is the key, and we don't think it is because it should be ownership, but if the BTA is right that designation is the key, then the Peterbilts have to be exempt. That's exactly like actually the Kurtz Brothers case that was at the BTA in 1995. They were hauling what was called mill pond sand was one example in that case. They were hauling construction debris in containers in that case. Actually, in that case, the customers that were putting that construction debris into containers were not designating or controlling where those containers were going. But the BTA in that case determined that Kurtz Brothers was entitled to the transportation for hire exemption because they were acting as a for-hire motor carrier. They were not taking ownership of that waste. A
couple of these BTA cases are before the Rumpke case was decided. Right? And does that Rumpke change that outcome?
We certainly believed, at least at the tax commissioner, it confused a lot of things. But it shouldn't change the outcome of this case because the Rumpke case was a private carrier. It's clear in the write-up by the Ohio Supreme Court that the primary determination in that case was that Rumpke, as a private carrier, took ownership of the waste from its from the waste generators at the curb. And that's why the Ohio Supreme Court determined that the generators, in the case of Rumpke, abandoned their waste at the curb. Now, that doesn't mean that all waste generators abandon their waste at the curb. And it's clear, even after Rumpke, you have the refuse transfer systems case, where the BTA determined, and even the tax commissioner agreed in that case, that you could have waste that's not abandoned at the curb. So it depends on the facts of basically who the hauler is. And if you have this for-hire motor carrier that's doing it, they're not taking ownership. Rumpke, different business model.
Well, in this case, we have, as you say, there were two, I think, of the Peterbilt trucks, which have the sort of the container on the back aspect. And there's the Lodol truck, is that the other one?
Yep.
The Lodol truck is a sort of what we think of as a garbage truck or a truck that drives around a residential neighborhood and picks up garbage at the curb.
Exactly. The Lodol truck is what you would picture in your mind as an actual garbage truck. It transports residential waste to what's sometimes called municipal solid waste or MSW. And the BTA did find that municipalities under contract with NAT did designate the destination for that waste. But the BTA also determined that that designation covered a minority of the residential customers that are served by that truck. I think the important point for NAT is that for those other residential customers, those subscription customers, the record is clear that NAT does not take ownership of their waste, does not control the destination of their waste. It's either the customer or flow control ordinances that designate destination. Mr. Torok is the owner of NAT. Unfortunately, he passed away a while ago, but when he was testifying at the BTA, he was explaining that, you know, that he doesn't operate like Rumpke. He operates as a for-hire motor carrier, as a public utility. He tells all of his customers that he's not responsible for their, he's responsible for getting their property where it's supposed to go. Absolutely, because he's transporting it. He's not responsible for disposing it. He's not responsible for the liability attached to it. He's serving as a trucking company.
Well, with respect to the claim, though, here, you would agree that the burden is on NAT to show the elements of this exemption. And so it would, the burden would be to show the primary use of each truck. And the burden would also be to show that the trash belonged to others. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And you say the record does demonstrate that.
And the record does demonstrate that, you know, I think, you know, uncontrovertibly, because there's, you know, the only testimony that shows, you know, kind of what the primary use is and whether it belongs to others was provided by Mr. Torok. And then there was also the director of the Wood County Solid Waste District, Mr. Ryman. All of that testimony was very clear and uncontroverted on both of those points.
Okay.
And I see my time is up.
Thank you, Mr. Lang. Mr. Peremski. You'll need to unmute.
There we go. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Thanks.
All right. Good. Thank you very much. And thank you for, I guess, all, dealing with all of this, just trying to do everything remotely. All right. Good morning, Your Honor. I'm here today on behalf of the Tax Commissioner, Mr. McClain. In speaking generally about this case, we're talking about abandonment, and specifically the abandonment of one's own waste and what it means to haul it. Now, the Tax Commissioner, the Board of Tax Appeals, the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio, PUCO, as well as this court have all held that abandoned waste is not tangible personal property, or TPP, subject to Ohio's transportation for hire tax exemption.
Well, Mr. Lang, Mr. Lang, point that for tax purposes, doesn't the definition in Title 57 control for personal property?
Mm-hmm. Well, Your Honor, in order to qualify for the transportation for hire tax exemption, you have to be determined to be a transportation for hire company. Now, the qualifications set out in statute require that, one, the taxpayer here, NAT, has to be transporting TPP. They have to be doing, or they have to transport TPP belonging to others. They have to be hauling it for consideration, and they have to be certified to engage in transportation for hire by a relevant state or federal authority. And in order to be certified in Ohio, you have to be certified by the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. And PUCO has explicitly determined that if you are hauling waste, during the process of when you're hauling waste, you are not hauling tangible personal property such that you are engaged in transportation for hire. This is a point that's been repeatedly made throughout this case, seemingly that holding a PUCO certificate means that you are almost carte blanche to transportation for hire company, when that's not the case. When one is hauling waste, for instance, they're subject only to a set of general safety guidelines provided by PUCO, whereas when they are hauling other objects that would qualify as TPP, they are subject to the full regulatory authority of PUCO. And as known by the tax commissioner and set forth on the record here, NAT does have a PUCO certificate that does set out that they are in the business of not just hauling waste, but also, I believe, liquids, gases, as well as large metals and machinery. So that's why the definition provided by PUCO actually is controlling in this matter. And that was also a finding by this court in the case of Rumpke. Now, moving forward, the other part of this is that the definition of tangible personal property does require ownership. The definition provided in revised code, chapter 57, states that it is every tangible thing subject to ownership, as tangible meaning any object that can be seen, felt, weighed, so to speak. And exemption requires ownership. Within the statute, it states that the object being moved, the tangible personal property, must be something belonging to others. And the definition provided by PUCO explicitly states that waste is an object that has been abandoned and that the generator of the waste has laid it out with specific intent to discard the property. And that's why when we're talking about this definition of waste as it applies to transportation for hire, the definition explicitly lays out that waste is something that has been abandoned. Now,
doesn't the definition though, the tax definition of personal property, it says subject to ownership, but that doesn't necessarily mean we know who the owner is. And in a sense, isn't that really the issue in this case with respect to these trucks? Who the trash belongs to?
Mm-hmm. Well, Your Honor, if we're talking about ownership as it applies, it's in this case NAT. When we're talking about waste, we're talking about something that in its nature is abandoned. There is nothing on the record to show that these customers, when they lay their waste out to be picked up by NAT, that they're explicitly retaining ownership of it. Now, when we're talking about abandonment, that's something that was discussed in this case, in the Rumpke case by this court. They focused on what it means to haul waste. Now, generally, when we're talking about a waste hauler versus, say, a shipper and a transporter, if I'm having a good shipped by UPS or FedEx, I have a vested interest in making sure that that good is picked up by UPS, for instance, and taken to its final destination and retained in good condition. Whereas with waste, when I'm leaving my waste out, or in this case, when NAT's customers were leaving their waste out, their only concern is that it's simply removed from their property. They're abandoning it. And at that point, NAT is fulfilling its contractual duty and maintaining ownership of the waste, because it should be noted in this case that while NAT repeatedly keeps stating that they are only a shipper, that they are not a waste hauler, that the contracts they have with every single one of these municipalities does state that their duties are to provide all manual parts and labor in order to execute the pickup, transportation, and ultimate disposal of waste here to every landfill. As far as we know within the record, there is nothing shown by any of these customers to reuse, recycle, repurpose, or compost any of this waste. Customers are not given any documentation showing where or when the waste is taken. Customers only want to remove. They only want to take it off of the property. And once NAT picks up the waste, the customer has abandoned all interest. Now, I understand that there's a lot of talk in this case, for instance, about NAT not owning landfills and that somehow differentiates them from Rumpke, the company that was examined in the Rumpke versus Zano case. But this court did not speak as of landfill ownership as being a relevant factor. All that was discussed in that case was that Rumpke was in the business of waste hauling, that they were in the business of waste transportation, that they were in the business of waste disposal, three things that NAT do, meaning that NAT is Rumpke in this case. Now, so I understand that.
So there'd be no distinction between a case such as Rumpke, where the entity that picks up the trash and conveys it to a landfill actually owns the landfill to which it's taking the trash.
That correct, Your Honor. My apologies.
That doesn't have any significance in your view.
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. The holding of the court in Rumpke was that, most importantly, the nature of the materials hauled is significant. And that was also the finding of the tax commissioner, as well as the Board of Tax Appeals. So it's not simply a matter of looking at whether you own the landfill. Of course, taking it to a landfill is important in designating what the property is. But whether you own the landfill, whether you're profiting off of it, that's not relevant to the consideration here. It's the nature of the materials hauled. We're not looking at whether you own the landfill. We're not necessarily considering who your client is. We're looking at what you're hauling. And in fact, that's an important distinction to keep in mind when we're talking about NAT's industrial and commercial clients as well. So as this court pointed out, the statute provides that it must be the primary purpose of the transportation for hire company that they are moving tangible personal property. So what that means is that it has to be shown that primarily what each of these trucks is hauling is a form of tangible personal property. Now, the low dollar truck, on the as far as we know on the record, is almost explicitly used to haul residential waste, solid municipal waste. But these two Peterbilt trucks, while Mr. Torok stated that they were primarily used for commercial industrial clients, it was also stated on the record that he can't really provide a breakdown for what they do, that these trucks can also and apparently have moved.
Let me ask you a question, Mr. Paremski. If the court were to disagree with you on some of your discussion of the definition of personal property, then the other point would be, has NAT proven that what it is hauling belongs to others? What does the evidence show on that?
Has NAT shown that whether they own
that what they're hauling belongs to others? Don't they have to show that?
They would have to show that. And Your Honor, there's nothing on the record that would show that that any of NAT's customers have somehow not abandoned their waste and that they retain an interest in it while it's ongoing. That could be shown, for instance, when we're discussing about continuing liability on the part of NAT's customers. Now, Mr. Ryman did argue that there might be a form of generator liability, but this was saddled when he was talking about that. This point was ultimately saddled in a discussion from him that a complaint could be filed against waste haulers for failing to properly move a load. And even then, when he was trying to discuss this matter of ongoing liability, he explicitly used the word that he only thought that a generator could be liable. And even then, we have to take in mind that to the extent Mr. Ryman made a legal conclusion regarding the ownership of some of this waste, which I believe he saddled some of that in requiring landfill ownership, that wasn't a conclusion that he could legally make. He was only brought on here to discuss applicable environmental regulations, not whether someone owns waste as a form of tangible personal property. And even then, we also had Bruce McCoy, who is currently employed by the Ohio Environmental Protection Agency Division of Waste Management, saying that the only form of generator liability that would apply here would perhaps be open dumping violations. But even then, it would have to be shown that NAT's customers were literally picking up their trash and throwing it in the street. Now, Your Honor, just speaking very briefly to some of the precedent here that's been discussed in this case, I know this court focused on, for instance, Triad Transport as well. There was a reference to the refuse transfer system cases. And it should be noted, first and foremost, that Triad Transport was decided before this court came to its conclusion in Rumpke versus Zano. And also in Triad Transport and in refuse transfer systems, the waste that was being picked up was transportation company was not picking up the waste from the waste generators. They were picking it up from another waste disposal company that had already picked up the waste and had moved it to intermediary transfer stations. And so even if we want to talk about the applicability of those cases without Rumpke, this case is factually distinct from those, because in those cases, we are talking about specific clients who are not the waste generators, who provided invoices to the waste hauling company that kept specific track of what was being hauled, where it was being taken, and ultimately all of the clients were invoiced about the underlying materials. And that's simply not something that's present on the record here. We don't have record of a lot of the receipts and invoices that NAT's customers are being provided. We were provided for some of the industrial commercial clients four sample invoices that don't particularly lay out what was picked up, when it was picked up. And those four sample invoices simply can't stand in the place when we're talking about NAT's customer base, including over 700 industrial, commercial, and institutional clients. And this is an important thing to keep note of here, because there's a distinction between having a commercial client versus hauling commercial waste. For instance, if I own a hauling company and my client is McDonald's, for instance, There's a very big difference between me hauling McDonald's discarded trash, something that can just be taken to a landfill alongside other solid waste, versus me hauling McDonald's excess fryer oil, something that does require a specific designation, specific care for where it be taken to. Now, Your Honor, also briefly addressing these contracts here between NAT and these municipalities. As noted before, NAT does have the burden to show that these trucks are primarily hauling tangible personal property belonging to others. And these municipal clients only make up roughly 1,000 out of, I believe, the 7,000 plus clients covered by NAT under these three trucks. And I believe a point was made in briefing about the ownership, municipal clients being different from subscription clients. And that's very much the case here. When we're talking about some of these municipal clients, that's very different from the waste generators that they serve. There's a difference between, as I said, having a municipal client versus talking about the underlying waste generator here. Simply because we have generators who are electing lawmakers to provide for local floor ordinances, they don't stand in the same place as the municipal officials who entered into these contracts on behalf of the waste generators. Now, Your Honor, if I may conclude here, tangible personal property, waste is not tangible personal property for tax purposes as applied under the transportation for hire exemption. And by hauling waste in the way that NAT does, they are not hauling tangible personal property belonging to others, and they do not qualify for the tax exemption. Now, a lot of semantics have been utilized to try and argue around the nature of the trash being hauled here, but as stated by this court, the nature of the materials hauled is significant. We look at what is being hauled, and the materials hauled here are abandoned waste. And for those reasons, we ask this court to affirm the decision of the Board of Tax Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Peremski. Mr. Lang, I used your time partly because I asked you a question at the end, but why don't you take 1 minute in rebuttal? I can't hear you.
That's better. Thank you. So the I would say to this point about it's just not true that the PCO kind of defines waste as being abandoned. That's an assumption that's made by the tax commissioner based on the Rumke case. If you look at any examples of a for-hire motor carrier that does not take ownership of the waste, the transport of that waste is subject to PUCO regulation. The waste that was transported in Kurtz Brothers, the waste that was transported in Triad Transport, the waste that was transported in the Refuse Transfer Systems case, all of those examples, all of those trucks being used by those companies would have been subject to PUCO regulation because those companies are not taking ownership of the waste, and that would be true also for the waste transported by NAT for its customers. I think that's the, what we'd like to ask the court to do is reverse the BTA and find that these three trucks at issue are entitled to the exemption of the transportation for hire exemption. Thank you, sir.
This case will be submitted and the court will advise the parties of its decision.